Good morning. I'd like to call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today is Thursday, February 24th, 2022. The time is 9:04 a.m. Please silence all cell phones. Present today are Senator Hoffman, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Olson, Senator Wilson, Senator Vonnemop is doing other state business. We'll be here in a little bit, and Co-Chair Stedman and myself, Co-Chair Bishop. Today's agenda, SB 151, Extend Alcohol Beverage Control Board. SB 173 is Dentist Specialist Licensed Radiological Equipment. SJR 12, Social Security Benefit Reduction and Repeal, and our bills previously heard. SB 151, Extend Alcohol Beverage Control Board. This is the first hearing. Our intention is to hear a bill introduction, take invited and public testimony, set the bill aside. Senate President Michicki, Madison Govan, is that right? Did I say none? Staff to Senator Michicki, would you please come before the committee and introduce yourselves for the record and present your presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Senator Peter Michicki, District O on the Kenai.
Good morning. For the record, Madison Govan, staff to Senate President Michicki.
Madison, is this your first time here?
Yes.
You don't find this table intimidating, do you?
Absolutely not.
Very good, because we're not. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the Senate Finance Committee. This is a relatively simple board extension for the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. Not usually an extension, board extension kind of guy, but this does dovetail with another bill you may have heard of. The board's doing a good job. We always go with the recommendation of the audit group, and we do certainly hope for your support, but the board is doing a good job. They have some problems facing them that we think will make their jobs easier. Things like the database issues that I think will be talked about by the audit staff. But I'm, at this point, going to hand it over to my staff, Madison Govan, to introduce the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Senator Michicki, Ms. Govan.
Good morning, Co-Chair Bishop, Co-Chair Stedman, and other committee members. Again, for the record, my name is Madison Govan, staff to Senate President Michicki. The bill you have before you, Senate Bill 151, extends the termination date of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, which is set to sunset on June 30th of this year, 2022. After the legislative audit was conducted, they concluded that it would be in the state's best interest to extend this board for an additional 4 years, making the new sunset date June 30th, 2026. In accordance with the provisions of Title 24 and Title 44, a legislative audit reviewed the activities of the ABC board and determined the board is effectively serving the public interest by controlling the manufacture, barter, possession, and sale of alcoholic beverages in the state. Findings also included the board meetings were conducted effectively, regulations were adopted to implement statutory changes, and investigations were conducted in a timely manner. I urge your support of this bill to extend the sunset date of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. In the audience, we have Chris Curtis with Ledge Audit here to walk you through the audit, should members have any questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Well done. Seeing no questions, we're going to go to our invited testimony portion of the hearing. Ms. Curtis, our legislative auditor, good morning. Welcome. And you know the protocol, ma'am, so please proceed.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I'm your state legislative auditor. So Division Legislative Audit conducted a sunset audit of this board. It is dated September 2020. I believe you all have a copy of it in your packets. So this audit is unique because in addition to conducting the sunset audit, we also conducted a special audit of the board's licensing process. And this report includes the results of the sunset review and the special audit of the license process. So report conclusions begin on page 9 of the audit. Overall, we did find the board served the public's interest by effectively conducting their meetings, by adopting regulations to implement statutory changes, and by investigating cases in a timely manner. but the audit also concluded that the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, referred to as AMCO, that their operations were being impeded by a significant number of vacancies and improvements were needed in the license process. So we are recommending a 4-year extension. That's half of the 8-year maximum allowed for in statute. The reduced extension reflects the need for more timely oversight of the board's progress in addressing its licensing inefficiencies. If you turn to page 14 of the audit, you'll see a schedule of licenses. As of February 2021, there were 1,867 active licenses. And during our review, we noted that there was a backlog of applications due December 2020. This led to the board issuing just over 300 temporary licenses to allow the applicants to continue to operate while the backlog was being worked. And we were told the backlog was due to vacancies, so we did a little deeper dive into AMCO staffing, and our results of that review are on page 15 in Exhibit 3. So Exhibit 3 summarizes the staff positions that were vacant at least 2 months during the audit period. You'll see that there are seven staff positions that were vacant, a total of 92 months from FY18 through February of 2021. Now, management provided reasons for these vacancies, and they included not hiring due to an uncertainty surrounding a proposal to merge AMCO with the Division of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing, not hiring because of the unknown impact of the pandemic on the industry, and not hiring for one position that was transferred from Fairbanks to the Mat-Su due to the inability to find workspace. The extended vacancies negatively impacted AMCO's ability to support the ABC board as well as the Marijuana Control Board. On page 16 through 18, we summarize our detailed testing of the license process. We found that 76% of new licenses and 85% of transfer licenses were issued within 6 months. On average, it took 153 days to issue a new license and 131 days to issue a transfer license. We found that the license requirements are complex, making the application process complicated and inherently subject to error. Additionally, the applications are submitted manually and are not subject to electronic edits. Our analysis of the license process identified three main opportunities for gaining efficiencies. First, we found the applications were deemed incomplete or inaccurate at a rate of 96% for new applications and 97% of transfer applications. So once they're deemed deficient, the application has to be sent back to the applicant. They're asked to cure the deficiency and resubmit. That, of course, causes delays. Second, confirming the applicant's compliance with the various statutory and regulatory requirements causes significant delays, and waiting for the receipt of that compliance information, including whether or not the local governing bodies are going to protest a licensing action, added on average 88 days to the license process for new applications and 35 days for transfer licenses. And thirdly, we found that once all requirements are met, just simply issuing the license took 23 days for new licenses and 28 days for transfer licenses. So automating the process could significantly gain efficiencies. We did make 5 recommendations beginning on page 27. Rec 1, we recommend the commissioner ensure AMCO staff vacancies are filled in a timely manner. Recommendation number 2 on page 28, the board should significantly enhance or replace its existing database and automate the application process where possible. Recommendation 3, page 29, the board and AMCO director should strengthen procedures over entering restricted purchasers in the statewide database of written orders. We made the same recommendation in the prior sunset audit, and this testing found that all 27 individuals convicted of relevant violations were not entered into the statewide database of written orders. Fourth recommendation is on page 30. The board and AMCO director should implement procedures to ensure municipalities receiving refunds of biannual licensing fees are actively enforcing alcoholic beverage laws. The statutes require that biannual licensing fees be refunded to municipalities. However, if the commissioner finds that a municipality is not actively enforcing the alcoholic beverage laws, the refund can be denied. In the prior sunset audit, we found that municipalities were not filing their quarterly reports, This time we found they were filing their quarterly reports, but no one at DCCED was reviewing them, and the fees were automatically being refunded. And the fifth recommendation is on page 31. AMCO directors should ensure the refunds to municipalities are appropriately reviewed. Similar to the prior Sunset audit, we found that there was just one employee who was responsible for calculating the refund. No one was reviewing the calculations. So the responses to the audit begin on page 47. The commissioner agrees with all of the recommendations and does report that corrective action has occurred already at the time of the response. First, she reports that vacancies, AMCO vacancies, have been filled. Secondly, she reports that the department is developing a needs assessment for automating the application process. And thirdly, she stated that AMCO's enforcement unit had already worked to enter all the 27 individuals into the statewide database and had improved their procedures. And then finally, regarding the calculation of the biannual licensing fees, she stated that improved procedures would be implemented. The ABC board's response to the audit is on page 49. The chair disagrees strongly with our recommendation for only a four-year extension and claims that an early sunset would jeopardize the public's trust and undermine their confidence in the public process. And although the chair agrees with all of the recommendation, he believes that the findings are not material enough to warrant a reduced extension.
Questions? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did the chairman address recommendation number three?
Through the chair, I think in a very non-precise way, saying he does agree with the recommendations.
Was there a reason that they did not address this? It seems as though this is a very serious matter where they're not following the statute regarding these 27 individuals that were convicted.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, similar to the prior Sunset audit, we found that there weren't very strong procedures in training and entering these, and there was some miscommunication between the court system and the AMCO office as far as how they were going to become aware of the convicted individuals. And we just a breakdown in communication.
From my viewpoint, if the board does not take this up, it would seem that there should be some corrective action in penalties to the board, such as withholding per diem or some other action, because these. Without addressing these individuals and putting them into the database so that the public is aware, is ignoring the issue and not following the work that they should do in regards to their responsibilities as board members.
Mr. Hoffman, through the chair, the commissioner reports that all 27 had been entered now into the database, and for the public and for other committee members, information about the statewide database of written orders is in background information on page 6, and how important that database is to preventing alcoholic beverages from getting into rural areas that have restrictions on the receipt of alcohol. So it is an important topic, and that's why we raised that in the report.
Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One big problem that I see is the vacancies that are there. What's the reason for the vacancies not being filled? Is that because the governor didn't appoint somebody or somebody else?
Senator Olson, through the chair, we do go through what the management told us. They stated that they weren't hiring due to uncertainty regarding a proposal for merging the AMCO with the Division of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing. Apparently, that was something they were looking into. And so while they were figuring that out, they were reluctant to hire. Additionally, there were some delays because the pandemic, weren't sure how that was going to impact the industry. So extreme amount of vacancies, fairly shocking.
Last question, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up.
First, a comment on the vacancies. It doesn't seem like they've got justifiable reasons to go ahead and not fill the vacancies. You can always fill them and then discharge them later, put them on a temporary basis. But I guess as you look at the history of the ABC board, which is important to the state of Alaska, because so many constituents are out there that are involved, I guess, is there been a time in history where this has happened, where you've had vacancies and that the chairman has vehemently disagreed with the recommendation put forward by the audit?
Through the chair, over the last 20 years, this board has received a 3 to 4 year extension on multiple times. So that is the standard for this board, and it's not surprising given the extensive amount they work with constituents and the strain that they could be under, and plus the addition of the Marijuana Control Board, and the importance of AMCO to serve both of those dual purposes. Since I've been there for around 12 years in this position, I have not seen a chair disagree with the recommendation.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Ms. Curtis, earlier in your overview, you mentioned moving a position from Fairbanks to the MATSU, and could you repeat that again, because I want to make sure I heard it right, and then if I did, then I'll come back with a follow-up.
Yes, certainly. One of the positions that were vacant, the reason it was vacant, we were told, was because the position had been moved from Fairbanks to the MATSU, yet there was they were having trouble finding workspace in MATSU for the position.
Okay, so I'll wait till the next testifier and go a little deeper on that subject. Thank you. Okay, no further questions to Ms. Curtis. We're going to go online now to the ABC chair of the board, Dana. I'm not even going to tackle the last name. I won't embarrass myself or embarrass you. I'll just let you roll with the last name.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dana Wolukowicz, chairman of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. I am testifying here today to ask this committee in support of SB 151 and to consider an amendment to SB 151 to extend the termination date of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board to 6 years. I do understand that it's typical to simply accept the legislative auditor's recommendations, and I do appreciate Ms. Curtis's testimony here today. The board and the Alcohol Marijuana Control Office do not dispute the findings of the audit, just the overall recommendation of the shortened term. I do want to clarify a couple comments that were made in the previous testimony regarding Senator Hoffman's concerns regarding the recommendation number 3, and by no means do I want the members of the committee to feel that we believe that recommendation number 3 is not important. We do fully believe that is an important step in ensuring that those offenders are included in the alcohol database. I just want to kind of appoint attention to the report on page 30, where it says, additionally, due to miscommunication and turnover of key agency staff, reports of the convictions and violations were not consistently provided to the court system. This kind of goes back a couple years ago, where the previous director, you may recall, did not have great communication with other agencies within the state of Alaska. That communication with the current director, Klinkart, has improved dramatically, and we're very happy with that communication, and we're getting the information in now. And as was stated previously, restricted purchasers are now in the database, and we are implementing steps to ensure that database is updated consistently and more timely basis. I also want to discuss and mention the vacancy issue. There was a reference to a desire by the Department of Commerce to merge the AMCO office, some administrative functions of the AMCO office, into Department of Commerce licensing. That was a administrative directive that wasn't necessarily shared and supported by the AMCO office or the board. There's very unique situations involving reviewing AMCO and the applications. And the previous chairman of the board actually went to the governor's office, because what was happening is that the job vacancy announcements were being prepared by the director at the direction of the board to fill these open positions, but they were not being posted by the appropriate people within the Department of Commerce. After lobbying the governor's office, after several months of lobbying the governor's office, the positions were eventually opened and we were allowed to staff them. Generally speaking, the two recommendations, and to let you know, those people that were kind of holding up the process within the Department of Commerce are no longer there, and we've had much better communication with the Department of Commerce and cooperation on other issues since those people have left. So we're very kind of happy to see that things have turned around now. Generally speaking, the findings are categorized, the audit findings are categorized into two basic areas. The first being the lack of staffing, as Ms. Curtis has mentioned. But I do want to point out that subsequent to the audit period, all staffing positions were filled and AMCO is currently fully staffed. So essentially four of the five recommendations have been addressed by filling of the vacancies noted in the report. And I'd also like to point out that these were all filled before the report was even published. The remaining finding is pretty much the lack of the automated application processing system. The board and AMCO do not dispute the need for a new system. AMCO's three licensing staff handled 500 new and transfer applications during the audit period, as well as approximately 900 alcohol renewal applications annually. They also handle event permits and marijuana license applications as well. This is all done by three people when they're fully staffed. The alcohol application process is highly manual and all paper-based. As a CPA myself, I don't know how the staff are able to keep up with only the basic tools of Word and Excel available to them. The office has some pretty amazing staff. Both the board and AMCO are highly in support of an automated and online system. However, it's beyond the authority of the board and the office to procure such a system, as it would require capital funds. Funds for such a system are included in SB 9, the Title IV rewrite. I want to thank the members of the committee for unanimously passing SB 9 in the Senate. The board is firmly believes that this is good legislation and hope that it passes the House chamber and goes on for final approval at the governor's office. In anticipation of SB 9 passing both chambers, the board, in anticipation of SB 9 passing both chambers, the board has directed Director Klinkhart to scope the IT project, and with the cooperation of the Department of Commerce, he has already met with several vendors. And just to be clear, the board and AMCO are not trying to avoid another audit, but rather we would welcome a follow-up audit to clear the staff's findings and a subsequent audit once a processing system has been procured and operational. We simply feel that these issues are unrelated to and should not limit the term of the board. Why the term of the board is important. A short four-year term of the board casts uncertainty in the industry and with the public at the wrong time. The board works diligently to balance the concerns of public health, public safety, and the alcohol industry by providing a transparent process that serves the public interest. The board feels that a shortened term will hamper the work of the board, and at their January 18, 2022 meeting in Juneau, directed me to ask the legislature for an extension beyond 4 years. Given the anticipated Title IV rewrite, which will be a significant undertaking and will require the utmost trust and confidence in the public process, uncertainty of the existence of the board beyond 4 years should be removed. I thank you for your time and consideration of this amendment and look forward to any questions you may have. Thank you.
We have two questions presently in the queue, Senator Wilson and Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the first issues is the application and completeness and accuracy. It seems that out of your 505 applications that were found during the audit period, an inaccurate rate of 97-96% seems really high, and I'm sure these are very competent, educated folks who are filling out the applications. What do you feel is the holdup? Is the application process too difficult, not clear, and would actually having an electronic filing of the system make the application accuracy better for these applicants that are actually filing?
Thank you for the question through the chair. Again, this is Dana Wolukowicz, chairman of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. The application process is very detailed, paper-based, and has to follow statute as well as regulation. So there's a lot of information that needs to be submitted. A lot of that information has to be cross-checked with, for example, the corporation's database in, maintained by the Department of Commerce. And just having a electronic submission process that is integrated with existing databases within the state of Alaska, like, for example, Department of Commerce licensing and corporations database, would go tremendously far to just even before the application is submitted, it's cross-checked, knocking out perhaps, you know, 50% of the errors by the people. I personally am the owner of King Street Brewing Company, and we have two licenses, a winery license and a brewery license, and it's a very long process. I really feel for the people. I first submitted the application about 10 years ago, and it took me a good 3 months, not only just to understand the statutes and understand what license type I'm trying to apply for, but to understand all the nuances associated with it. And we really have people like what I would consider and the AMCO staff, the licensing professionals, examiners, are the equivalent of like a paralegal because they have to cross-reference various documents. If you have a transfer application, for example, you have to actually read the bill and sale agreement to ensure that it's compliant with the statute. And that takes a little bit more double-checking and a bit more time than just, you know, checking off a box and saying, yes, you submitted the right form. So those that's kind of a bit in a nutshell as far as why that happens. But we are definitely very hopeful that an automated system would cut that 97% error rate down to something a lot more manageable so that our staff can stay a lot more focused on getting those applications that are that have been self-checked through the system quicker.
Did you want to follow up, Senator Wilson?
I do, Mr. Chair. I just don't see how that's going to help the applicant understand some of those issues. I just wonder if the board would have a different application fee that would help cover some technical assistance provided by the board to make sure that some of these applications get processed in a more timely manner. And then finally, I just have a question for, if I could, just to ask the chair of the board on terms of, I'll wait to have that. I'll ask that question to the bill sponsor.
Thank you.
And so to follow up on the question through the chair, again, Dana Wolukowicz with the chairman of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, we also have a position, governance specialist, as all, to assist with the rollout of applications and regulations. Due to the staffing issues that were experienced, there wasn't as great of outreach to the industry to help them out with these forms. We now that we've gotten fully staffed, we're looking forward to meetings, either it be Zooms or training sessions, an opportunity to go back to the industry and say, hey, this is exactly how these the forms are to be filled out, and to give them some guidance as to what they want. It's partially the statutes because they are complex And I'm hopeful with it, and I'm certain with the Title IV rewrite, that these are going to get a lot more simpler and easier to follow and understand. So that's another reason why we're very supportive of that. But I agree, there needs to be more outreach, and we do have plans for addressing that to help reduce the level of stress that the applicants have to go through to fill out these forms.
Thank you. Senator Stedman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on a quick note on the request for consideration of an extension in time from 26 on forward to 28 or some other year, I don't feel that the board should worry about the legislature eliminating the board in 2026. I think what's helpful for us is that we have another review in 4 years. And if the issues go away, the upcoming audit will be pretty efficient and quick, and most likely the next extension would be longer. So anyway, I just want to put that on the record that there's little likelihood that the legislature would eliminate the board in 26.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with the last speaker that having another audit right now to try and get an extension is not warranted because of the changes that have gone on. Let the board go ahead and stabilize and then get into the process before we call for another audit, because an audit is fairly extensive. It takes a lot of time by Ms. Curtis's staff, and I would wait to see how it streamlines out, especially during this time of transition where new people are coming on board. There could very well be a new person appointing these members after the election. So with that, I agree with Senator Stedman.
Thank you. All right, seeing no further questions, Mr. Wall. I thought you had a question for this bill sponsor.
I do, but I have another question for
her. Okay. Senator Wilson has another question for the chair of the ABC board.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Bishop. Mr. Dana, the past board and chair of the director of the AMCO made a lot of decisions on licenses that were more political in nature, and they say that on the record that we're going to hold this license up for something else when we get to Juneau, was done to a licensee in Juneau. Has the board still practiced fairness and when making these decisions, or have they still been more appeals based on more of the political nature of the board?
Senator, through the chairman again, this is Daniel Lukowitz, chairman of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. I can't speak for the previous chairman, and my tenure on the board has been a year and a half. I've been chairman of the board for approximately 12 months now, and I would say that myself, I am 100% committed to following the letter of the statute as well as the regulation. I don't feel politics should really play any part in whether a license application is approved or not. We look at the license application solely on its merits and the availability of license of that license type to be assigned. We work with the municipalities to ensure that protests are cleared in a matter that is amicable to the municipalities or local jurisdictions. We have a completely new board that has been appointed in the last 12 months. And so I'm actually the most senior person on the board. And I actually have to say that the board is incredibly thoughtful and professional in their manner in conducting business. They weigh the needs of all aspects of the public interest, and in those aspects being public safety, public health, as well as interest in the industry. By no means do any one of those interests outweigh any other, and we have a good, thorough discussion and very respectful discussion on the merits of every application. I don't feel at any point that, at least in my tenure over the last 18 months, that they that we have held something up, an application due to a political resolution in Juneau. We are obviously cautiously optimistic with Senate Bill 9 passing, which I believe would be it is good legislation and would be good for all parties involved, the state of Alaska overall.
Thank you. I think so.
So in that respect, I can't think of any application that was held up. I hope I answered that question to your liking. If you have anything more specific, I definitely would appreciate a follow-up.
Senator Wilson?
Thank you.
Senator Wilson's nodding his head. He's satisfied. I have a question for the chair, and maybe it's I'll throw it out there on the table. Maybe it would go to your director, but why was the position moved from Fairbanks to Mat-Su, and has it been filled? Is it still open? Or tell me the politics behind that.
I'm going to defer to the director. I think he's on the call as well. But I believe it was just an investigator's position that was one of our investigators is moving from Fairbanks to the Mat-Su. It really didn't have any effect on any of these findings. We were looking for a suitable place to basically just house that person, and the director found an excellent co-location with the Mat-Su Police Department there. So I'm a little kind of scratching my head on that being a part of Mrs. Curtis's testimony, because there was no enforcement-related findings in this report. There was a small vacancy probably for a period of time for the coverage of enforcement in the Mat-Su, but I'd have to defer that to Director Klinkart. But otherwise, all of our administrative staff is housed in Anchorage, so that really shouldn't have affected any of the administrative findings that you have in the report.
Thank you. See, no more questions for the chairman. We're going to go to Director Klinkart. He's online for questions only, but maybe if you could, if you're following along, sir, could you put yourself on the record, and maybe you could shed some more light on why this position was moved from Fairbanks to Mat-Su.
And yes, can you hear me okay, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
All righty. Hi. For the record, this is Director Glenn Klinkart. I'm the director of the Alcohol Marijuana Control Office, and When I came on board, it was kind of a temporary gig, and then when I was asked to take this job full-time about a year or so ago, one of the things that I looked at was, of course, resources. We don't have enough resources to cover everything, and with the growth potential and the number of licensees, marijuana and alcohol in the Mat-Su, we had an opening, or at least we had a spot that hadn't been filled in Fairbanks, and so the idea was to essentially have somebody in that large community that was asking for more enforcement, as well as being able to be there to be able to do inspections so that new licensees wouldn't have to wait as long. And we were lucky enough to have one of our investigators wish to fill that spot, which opened up in Fairbanks. So we basically now have officers and inspectors in Juneau, Anchorage, the Mat-Su, and Fairbanks. So we actually have much better coverage now. However, unfortunately, that spot, there was some organizational issues with trying to find a spot. I was asked to kind of hold off. Eventually, I was able to start making calls to folks and found a really good spot, working with, Wasilla was more than happy to, and in fact, they welcomed having the inspector, and investigator there with open arms, and it's been, the feedback from those folks has been good. At the same time, we found a really, really highly qualified, experienced investigator to work in Fairbanks. So it's been one of those things where it was more painful to make it happen than the idea of trying to come up with a way to fix the problem.
Thank you. Senator Wilson has a question.
Thank you, Director. How do you feel about the board being able to waive certain statutes regarding population limits where the statute of the law is not applicable for areas of my district, for example, If I have a facility, let's say on Big Lake, for example, that would like to have a license, they would have to go by petition and go in a mile radius, but fish can't sign the petition, so how do they meet the population in terms of number of signatures in that type of situation? Just wondering if the board would like that authority to sort of waive those statutes.
Through the chair, to Senator Wilson, thank you for that question, sir. Again, this is Director Klinkhardt of AMCO. Well, it's kind of a two-part question. Please make sure that I answer everything for you, Senator Wilson. The first part, basically, I will say that the board, I'm 25 years in law enforcement. I'm a rule follower, and when I hear people say statutes, I tend to sit up. And I will tell you that the board is also made up of folks. There is also a law enforcement representative on the board as well, and they are very cognizant of making sure that they follow the statutes. They also have a really well-qualified assistant attorney general who is there at every meeting, really making sure that they're staying in their lane statutorily and regulatorily. And I'll tell you, if I thought that they were going off script, I would be the first to say so. And yet, for being a new board, they do very, very well. As for your sample, an example, Ms. Senator Wilson, yes, there are, number one, there's some confusions about the populations and which licenses. In fact, when I came here, I too didn't quite fully understand how the process is for some of these and even how you determined how many people you needed. It was the statutes weren't clear. And so we actually, in the last 6 months, have come up with guidelines. When you talk about trying to train people and help them, we've come up with guidelines to help folks that want to go out and get those signatures to be able to figure it out in a way that you don't have to be a mathematician. And, in fact, so if you have a constituent currently, please have them contact me, and I'll be happy to show them that there may be some other easier ways to accomplish this. So I hope that answers your question, Senator Wilson.
No need to answer, but it's fine.
Thank you. Senator Olson, okay, no. All right, seeing no further questions, Mr. Klinkhardt, thank you for being online to help us move this process along. Next, we're done with our invited testimony. Did you want to ask the Senate President a question now, or do you want to wait? All right, we're going to go to public testimony, so our invited testimony is now closed. We're going to go to public testimony. Jake, I don't see anybody there. Anybody in the room that would like to testify? Seeing nobody in the room to testify, and everybody's shaking their head no, we're closing public testimony. It is now closed. Any further committee discussion? Seeing none. Amendment deadline, Monday, February 28th at noon. We're setting this bill aside. Next, up is SB 173, Dentist Special License Radiological Equipment. This is the first hearing of SB 173, the bill's introduction. And Senator Wilson and his staff, Ms. Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator Wilson, will do the bill introduction and sectional analysis. So you can set wherever you want. If you would like to sit at the head of the table to support your magnificent staff, that's fine too.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the Finance Committee. For the record, this is Senator David Wilson, Senator for District 3D, and with me today is Ms. Jasmine Martin, staff in my office. Senate Bill 73 does two things. This would transfer the inspection of dental radiological equipment from the Board of Dental Examiners to the Department of Health and Human Services and establishes a specialty dental license. These changes were suggested by members of the dental industry and have been before this body in previous legislation before, Mr. Chair. These are much-needed updates for our dental licensing laws that will keep the public safer by ensuring dentists and advertising specialists have the specialty training and ensuring that radiological equipment that is inspected in a timely manner. I hope you smile very favorably on this piece of legislation and you fills you in with these issues. I'll turn you now over to my staff, Jasmine Martin, and also online we do have a Dr. Logan who can probably give a pretty real life examples of why this piece of legislation is also necessary.
Thank you. Ms. Martin?
For the record, Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator Wilson. As Senator Wilson noted, the bill does kind of two separate things. Both of these things were in separate pieces of legislation in the 2020 truncated session, so if they seem a little bit familiar, that might be why. So for the first part, the bill would move the authority and the responsibility for dental radiological equipment inspections from underneath the dental board to the Department of Health and Social Services. The Department of Health and Social Services already inspects medical radiological equipment and employs inspectors, whereas the Board of Dental Examiners has to certify inspectors, and they go out and independent inspectors, and they inspect these equipment in dental offices. This has posed a problem in the recent years because no certified inspector currently exists in the state. So the bill consolidates these inspections into the Department of Health and Social Services where they employ an inspector. And then for the second part, Senate Bill 173 allows the Board of Dental Examiners to define and license dental specialists. It also prohibits a dentist from advertising as a specialist if they've not been licensed as one. So it's a truth in advertising element. So currently a dentist can advertise as a specialist, such as an orthodontist, endodontist, pediatric dentist with no specialty training in the field. They can just slap it on a sign and say they're a pediatric dentist. And the legislature hasn't given the board the authority to set a specialist license, and so they have no authority to penalize bad actors. As Senator Wilson noted, this was seen as an issue by members of the dental industry who brought it to our attention. With that introduction, I would like to drill into the sectional analysis.
Any questions before we drill into the sectional analysis? I think the Novocaine's coming, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess this bill is more directed toward personnel or more directed toward equipment inspections?
Through the chair to Senator Olson, equipment inspections.
If I can continue, Mr. Chairman.
Please, Senator.
We've been hearing lately that the Department of Health and Social Services has so much responsibility that they're trying to go and split that up into two entities. This seemed like it would go ahead and add more of a burden for them in the department to go ahead and start dealing with inspectors, inspections, licensing of personnel, and those kind of things. What do you say to that?
Through the chair to Senator Olson, we've worked with the department on this language, and one of the things that the bill does is it allows for the collection of fees to pay for a position to inspect. And again, this is something that they already do. It's just adding that responsibility. The amount of medical radiological equipment in the state is also being inspected by them.
Last question, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
You say they're already doing it. Have there been any violations that have resulted in either people losing their licenses or some type of action done to go ahead and correct what's there?
And for the record, I believe this, Senator Wilson, through the chair, Senator Olson, not yet. This is something that will happen, and we do have a couple of practices that are at that time frame of if they don't get licensed soon, then they will be out of compliance. And there may be facilities that are out of compliance, but maybe just have not reported their compliance status.
I guess that's troublesome in the fact that somebody has invested into a dental facility and a business there, and then all of a sudden they're out of compliance because of a regulation or a rule or statute change, and they're threatened of closure. Is that correct?
Through the chair to Senator Olson, we also have Director Chambers in the room to speak to this a little bit, but they already have to have their radiological equipment inspected, and there's no one to inspect it right now, and they would be out of compliance here soon. She can kind of speak to the timeline.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No further questions.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Are you ready to drill down into the sectional analyses?
For the record, this is Jasmine Martin. So the sectional analysis, Section 1 is conforming language. Section 2 adds a new section to AS 801065, and this requires the Board of Dental Examiners to collect fees on behalf of the Department of Health and Social Services for the inspection of dental radiological equipment. Section 3, so this is the section pertaining to the dental specialty licenses, and it adds a new section to AS 836, and so this is all new language in this Section 3 here. And it's a rather long section, so I'm kind of break it up. So for the first part, it just says that a dentist cannot advertise as a specialist if they don't have a specialist license. The second part establishes the qualifications for a dental specialist license. The third part deals with the suspension and revocation of a specialist license. So it establishes that the board may suspend or revoke a specialist license set by by the process set in AS 836315. And then Section 4 is back to the radiological equipment. This adds a new section to AS 4429020. And this requires DHSS to establish standards of registration, use, record keeping, and inspection of dental radiological equipment in compliance with federal law. Section 5 and 6 are conforming language. And then Section 7 is also conforming. It repeals certain sections of law that are no longer relevant with these changes. Section 8 allows the affected parties to adopt regulations, so the Board of Dental Examiners, the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, and the Department of Health and Social Services. Section 9 allows the department and board to immediately begin setting regulations, and Section 10 sets a delayed effective date for the rest of the legislation to allow the department's time to adjust, write their regulations, and prepare for this legislation to take effect.
Ms. Martin, this delayed effective date, does that sync up to the theoretical reg package will be done at that time, and that effective date is July 23rd, so everything will be ready to go, or can you explain that for me?
Yeah, so to the chair, for the record, this is Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator Wilson, and we have Director Chambers here. We did work with both of the departments on this effective date, so they can speak to it.
Thank you. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So I'm have questions on Section 3, these 0836245 establishes that a board may suspend or revoke a specialist license. So I'm assuming that there are there dentists that have claimed to be specialists in some type of field and have not necessarily gone through the national certification process? Is that what's happening?
Through the chair to Senator Von Imhoff, yes.
Okay. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
So then let's say a dentist ignores this and claims that he or she is a specialist in something. How are we going to find out whether they have gone through this new statute or not? And then if, let's say we do find out, and you have revoked their specialist license, to me, I mean, are there other penalties, like a fine or a temporary suspension of their general license? Like they can't, I mean, they're committing, in essence, fraud.
Through the chair to Senator Von Imhoff, I believe we have the chair of the Board of Dentistry online to answer questions, and they can speak to their process for basically suspending or revoking licenses for noncompliance.
Under invited testimony, the chair is online.
Do we want to have them speak now or later after this is over?
If I would just prefer to wait till we, I got some questions for him as
okay,
well.
Okay, that sounds good. Okay.
So we'll wait. Well, okay, Jasmine, are you finished with your sectional?
I am finished with my sectional. Thank you.
Any questions? More questions from committee members? We're going to now go to our invited testimony, and we're going to open invited testimony. And Dr. David Logan is the executive director of the Alaska Dental Society, is online. And Ms. Dr. Logan, if you could put yourself on the record and make your comments to the bill. And I'm looking at Jake. And
I'm sorry, I was muted out of my own end there. Sorry, Mr. Chair. David Logan, Alaska Dental Society. I'm the executive director for the Alaska Dental Society. I'd like to thank Senator Wilson for bringing the bill forward and Jasmine for doing a great job of explaining the bill. As mentioned, there is two parts to it there. It deals with x-ray inspection and it deals with specialist licenses. I'm going to focus on the x-ray inspection aspect there. As Senator Olson noted, we have dentists that are coming up to a compliance issue at the end of this calendar year. X-ray units have to be inspected every so often, 6 years, and we've been without the ability to find a private contractor in the state to do inspections for just about that period of time now. We certainly have recognized the need. We have searched for ways to find somebody. We've looked at retired inspectors. We've looked at bringing inspectors from other states. We've basically left no stone unturned. And really the only option as we see it is to return it to the Department of Health and Social Services, which has inspectors on staff trained in it. To be a state certified inspector, you pretty much have to be specifically trained in the field of medical radiation inspection there. It's just not something that the average person can train up for or has the skill set for. And we feel that certainly is the best option for the dentists in Alaska in order to be able to get their machines inspected, and it's also the best option for the public to ensure that these machines continue to operate safely. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions from the committee.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Dr. Logan, thanks very much for coming out this morning. One of the questions I have is, you say there's a shortage of qualified inspectors within the state. What seems to be the problem? Is it a statutory issue that we can correct here in the legislature, or is it the ability to go in and attract somebody from the private sector, or what do you see as the main reason we don't have qualified inspectors here?
I think it will be difficult to get inspectors into the state on a part-time basis. Essentially, what we're asking them for when they come in and do dental X-ray inspections is it's going to be a part-time job, almost a side hustle for somebody in that sort of field there. And it's just not something that lends itself to that. These are highly trained individuals there, and they're generally employed in full-time capacity. The state has indicated that they would be hiring an additional inspector, and they can probably find somebody because they can get somebody up on a full-time basis, and they have plenty of work for them there for somebody of that. For us to try and bring somebody up to move around the state for the limited number of X-ray tube heads we have, it just didn't financially work out for anybody.
Follow-up, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Logan, I'm assuming that you're in private practice or voicing with the concerns from the private sector. What are the health corporations and the dentists that are out there in rural Alaska that are under IHS, what do they do for inspections of their equipment?
They actually have inspectors on staff. Surprisingly, they are state certified, although there's no requirement for them to be state certified since they're federal facilities and IHS facilities there. But they do actually have some inspectors on staff. Unfortunately, we don't have access to those inspectors. They've got full-time work with the tribal corps there. So, I mean, they're doing what they need to. We're envious.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. All right. Any further questions for Dr. Logan? Seeing none, we're going to go next to Mr. David Nelson, Chair of the Alaska Board of Dental Examiners. Good morning, sir. Put yourself on the record and please provide us with your testimony. And we're going to have a question or two for you. Maybe you can hit unmute. Hello.
Okay. Sorry. My trouble with my mute, just like Dr. Logan did. For the record, good morning. Co-Chair Bishop and members of Senate Finance. My name is David Nielsen. I'm an Anchorage dentist and chair of the Board of Dental Examiners, and I also would like to thank Senator Wilson for introducing 173 and Jasmine. And also thank you for inviting me today to testify. The Dental Practice Act saw a repeal of the specialty license categories in 2012. For reasons I'm not really aware of, but the dental board has since shied away from investigating false or misleading advertising complaints that crop up from time to time. In order for the board to address this, we need specialty licensing categories that can hold up under legal scrutiny. The dental board requires the ability to help reduce public confusion over deceptive or false advertising brought by dentists using the term specialist or specializing in to an area of dentistry that is professionally recognized to require significantly more training than they have received. Typically, an accredited postgraduate specialty program demands at least 2 extra years of focused training beyond dental school. And another aspect of this is the dental board's had to deny a few license applications to specialists that have tried to come work in Alaska simply because we don't have a way to approve their application. Without having a license type that is limited to the specialty area of dentistry that they've been practicing in, we've had to deny licenses to dentists who have graduated from accredited specialty programs. If we limit the scope of practice to the specific branch of dentistry covered by the specialty license, it will open our doors a little wider to more qualified specialists. So right now, there's about at least 20 states that require licenses to permit or permits to practice as a specialist, and at least 42 states have laws against advertising as a specialist without additional training in a board-approved specialty. So this is really just about giving the public a way to help decide who's qualified to treat their condition. And we just feel like the public should be able to know if they're being treated by a general practitioner or a specialist. So I'm happy to take any more specific questions about this from anyone who has a question.
Thank you. Senator Von Imhoff, did you have a follow-up or are you fine? You answered my question in your comments, and Senator Von Imhoff has no further questions as well. And any closing comments?
Yes.
Seeing none. Senator Wilson.
I thought you were. I just want to have a closing comment, Mr. Chair.
No, I was talking to the okay. Mr. Nelson. You've got time. So thank you, Mr. Nielsen, for testifying. That'll close our invited testimony. Now we're going to open up for public testimony. And am I missing anything, Jake? We don't have anybody, do we? Jamie Parker, Health Program Manager, Division of Health and Social Services in Fairbanks. Are you there, Jamie?
Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, I am Dr. Jamie Parker, Chief of the Public Health Lab for the Division of Public Health.
Yes, thank you. Please present us with your testimony in 2 minutes, please.
Okay, thank you. So under my direction, we do operate a radiological health program at the State Public Health Labs that currently oversees over 1,000 devices across Alaska. This is done by a single radiological health physicist. So in order for us to take on this additional capacity, which we estimate to be somewhere around 2,200 to 2,400 additional dental devices, we are asking for an initial investment of an additional radiological health physicist and a part-time administrator to help with things like scheduling travel, scheduling these appointments, and helping mail out certificates and notices. So although we do have the capability to do this work, we are lacking capacity at this time, and our fiscal note reflects an initial year of getting our house in order, getting someone hired, looking through regulations, getting a database set up with all of these devices so we can identify the most vulnerable dental practices and devices out there, and so we can start the process of getting these on a regular annual inspection. These devices are only required to be inspected every 6 years, so we will be able to sort of pace ourselves by attending to 300 to 400 per year over a six-year period. And I'm happy to take any questions about the fiscal note.
Yep. Thank you. We might have you back when we do cover the fiscal note, but for today,
sure.
That's fine. All right. Has anyone in the room wishing to testify on this bill? It looks like I'm going to close public testimony. And I'm going to take a brief at ease. We're back on the record. Senator Wilson, closing comments, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Hopefully we got to the root of this problem, and we can hopefully extract this piece of legislation from committee so that we can help align safer and brighter smiles across Alaska.
Thank you for that close. We appreciate it, and it is nice to see everybody's smiling face today for the first time in, I think, 32 days at committee. So with that being said, we're going to set this bill aside. Next, we're going to take a brief at ease because we have to set up a presentation. So brief at ease. We're back on the record. Next up is SJR 12, Social Security Benefit Reduction Repeal. This is the first hearing of SJR 12. Our intention is to hear a resolution introduction, take invited and public testimony, set the bill aside. Before us today for the introduction is Senator Wilikowski and Keegan Farron. Is that correct, sir? Welcome to the Senate Finance Committee. And Senator Wilikowski, the floor is yours.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bill Wilikowski, State Senator representing East Anchorage and Jay Barron, with me is Keegan Farron, an intern in my office. This resolution urges Congress to repeal the windfall elimination provision and government pension offsets of the Social Security Act. Essentially, if the way this works is if a person in the state of Alaska works, or any other state for that matter, works for a public employer, teacher, firefighter, police officer, legislator, and they are also eligible for Social Security benefits, then there is a likelihood that their work for the public employer will reduce their Social Security benefits. And it could be as much as $498 per month, roughly $6,000 per year. It's a fairly significant amount. This applies even to those employees in the state of Alaska who don't actually get a defined benefit. So one of the main functions of Social Security is to provide for people to get a defined benefit, a pension. And the idea when the windfall elimination provision was created was to see that people don't get sort of this double pension. Well, we don't have that pension program in Alaska anymore. We don't have a defined benefit anymore. And so this has raised a lot of concern. It's raised concern even before that, quite frankly, because it has a significant impact on people's Social Security benefits. Impacts of the WEP and the GPO affect approximately 16,000 Alaskans. And this, if it were to pass, there is a lot of support for this in Congress. And this is urging Congress to eliminate those two provisions. And if they were to pass, it would have no negative fiscal impact to the state. In fact, it would have a positive impact because we estimate it would bring tens of millions of dollars in federal Social Security funds to Alaskans and therefore into our economy, helping our small businesses. So I'll stop right there, Mr. Chairman, and I have a very brief slideshow if the committee would be interested in seeing that.
So the WPE, for those listening at home, that's the windfall elimination provision, Senator Wilkowski?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. WEP is the windfall elimination provision, and the GPO is the government pension offset. And we can just have a real brief explanation if you're ready, Mr. Chair, through this slide
sure.
show, because it can be a little confusing what the terms are.
Yep. So... Mr. Ferrone?
For the record, Keegan Ferrone, intern in Senator Wilkowski's office. So the WEP affects more workers whose work history includes both covered and non-covered employment, with the non-covered employment also providing a pension. And basically the way this works is through what's called the first bend, a worker's first $996 of Social Security is reduced from 90% to as low as 40%, depending on the quantity of recorded years considered to be of substantial earnings. We estimate that the WEP reductions could amount to nearly $75 million annually for affected Alaskans.
Just a quick question on that. So that $75 million was in that, how'd you arrive at that number? Was that through your office or through Social Security Administration?
Through the chair. The $75 million is the estimate based on the $498 per month multiplied by the number of Alaskans that are affected by the WEP. So it could amount to as much as $75 million.
Thank you. That's direct payments. Doesn't count the indirect induced and as it goes to the economy to Senator Wilkowski's opening statements.
Through the chair, that's correct.
Thank you. Senator Stebbins, do you have a question?
Oh, I need to wait as
okay.
following Senator Wilkowski jumping ahead in the slide, so I'll wait till the slide gets here.
All right. Mr. Ferrone, and take your time. Take a deep breath. Is this your first time before the committee?
Through the chair, it is.
Yeah, we're friendly. So just breathe deep, relax, because this is a good presentation. And this could, there's a couple of us here at the table who want to make sure we're not going to get short-circuited on our Social Security.
So again, for the record, Keegan Ferrone. So to reiterate, the first bend in the formula is reduced based on the number of qualified years of what is considered to be substantial earnings. And for every year less than 30 years, that number is reduced by 5%. So that's where that 40% reduction from 90 to 40% reduction in the first bend is calculated. The three bend formula constitutes what is known as the primary insurance amount, or the PIA, which is the amount of Social Security benefits paid to a retiree at full retirement age. And under the WEP, there is no reductions in the second or third bend of the formula. Again, this is a reduction to the first bend only, which is the $996 of your Social Security benefits. So the WEP affects more Alaskans per capita than any other state. In Alaska alone, there's 12,000 or more retired workers that are affected, 60 of which are disabled, 478 of which are spouses and children, and this constitutes nearly 11.6% of all Alaskan Social Security beneficiaries that are affected by the WEP.
Just quick, Senator Stebbins, then I have a question.
I'm back on slide three.
Slide three.
I support this joint resolution. I think it's a, but I think a lot of, I think this issue surprises a lot of people. And they don't realize it until they get their check or they're applying, and then they're just aghast at this mechanism that's imposed by Congress. So could you explain again Table 3 without acronyms? And so, you know, someone sitting at home can understand what's actually going on.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman. So the Social Security Administration has a chart which indicates what they consider to be substantial earnings, which is increased yearly. So if a worker does not have at least 30 or more years of what the Social Security Administration considers to be substantial earnings, for every year below that number, their 90% of the first $996 is reduced by 5%. So, for instance, a worker with 20 or fewer years of what is considered to be substantial earnings would have their first bend of the formula, which is the 90% of the $996, reduced to 40%. So that's where that $498 a month is calculated from.
And I think they, on the street, they call this a Social Security offset.
Through the chair, Senator Stebbins, this is the windfall elimination provision, the WEP.
Correct.
Please continue. Oh, I'm going to go back to four for my question, sir. So what's the anomaly? Alaska is the highest in the nation percentage-wise. Did you say that, or our number of workers?
Through the chair, that's correct. Alaska per capita is the state that has the most workers affected by the WEP.
Per capita. Okay, thank you. All right, please continue.
So comparable to the WEP, the GPO affects the second most Alaskans per capita of all U.S. states. But unlike the WEP, which can apply to any non-covered employment, the GPO applies specifically to government workers' retirement benefits. And although pensions mitigate the effects of the WEP adjustment, the pensions are exactly what triggers the GPO adjustment, which reduces spouse and survivor benefits.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none, please continue.
On slide six, you'll see a hypothetical example of the GPO reduction. So for instance, if there was a covered worker with an $1,800 benefit, the spousal benefit before the GPO would be $900. And if that spousal benefit included a $1,000 non-covered pension, that two-thirds reduction of that $900 would leave a remaining benefit of $233. That is called a partial offset, in which the GPO is smaller than the spousal benefit, so the remaining benefit would be paid. And what is considered to be a full offset, what is shown there with a $1,600 non-covered pension, two-thirds of that pension amounting to $1,067, which is more than the original $900. Since the GPO is larger than the spousal benefit, no benefit would be paid. So again, the GPO reduction may equate to two-thirds of the pension that a Social Security beneficiary is set to receive from non-covered employment.
Next slide.
So in regards to the government pension offset, or the GPO, of the 3,322 Alaskans affected by this in 2020, nearly 73% were fully offset, meaning they received no Social Security, spousal, or widower's benefits because the reduction was greater than the benefit itself. 43% of those affected were widows or widowers.
That's criminal.
And just to reiterate again, Alaska is the second state per capita with the most GPO affections. So in conclusion, the WEP and the GPO were created to address one inequality associated with the double-dipping principle, yet they inadvertently created another. And we believe that Alaskans should not suffer cuts to their rightfully earned Social Security benefits due to their dedication to public service.
Senator Von Imhoff.
So thank you. I appreciate this. So I see on page 3 of the Act, or of the resolution, copies of this resolution are going to be given to a whole list of people. Is Congress paying attention to this? I mean, if we pass this and we give copies to everybody here, what are they going to do with those copies? Is it going to just get, you know, put, I'm sure they have piles of paper on their desk, a lot of priorities. How do you know, or what assurance do you have that people are going to be paying attention to this, and the Biden administration is actually excited to have these kind of resolutions, or is it, will it come to them as a surprise and be like, yeah, we've got a lot of other stuff to do? What is your sense of how this is going to be received and actually acted upon?
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Senator, through the chair. This is something that we think many Alaskans are very concerned with. In the State Affairs Committee, we had many people testify. I've been on Zoom conferences with dozens of people around the state. So I know in Alaska this is a big, big issue. The president has actually said that he supports eliminating both the GPO and the WEP. I know there is legislation that's been introduced. I don't know that. Do you know that the numbers? Keegan, we can get that to you, but I know that this is something that Congress is looking at. It's something that's been talked about, and the president does support it.
And I'd just like to comment, if I could, Senator. I know in past resolutions, our delegation has said to us on the floor on our joint sessions that these do mean something to them, and it helps them with their position on advocating for our position. So.
Quick follow-up?
Yes, ma'am.
So, Senator Wilikowski, thank you. I would like to see, I think it would be helpful to see what is going on the federal level with the bill. How far is it? Where is it? The folks on this list, do you even have remotely a sense of whether they're going to push the green button or not? I mean, those are the kind of things.
Happy to get that through the chair. Happy to get that to you, Senator Lademoff.
Could you get that to the committee and for all of us? Send it to my office and we'll distribute it. Thank you. Any other questions before we go to public testimony? Mr. Ferrone, thank you. And now we're going to open public testimony. Thank you, Senator. I don't see anybody. Nobody? All right, brief it is. I can't find it. Representative Guttenberg, Assemblymember Guttenberg, welcome to the committee, and introduce yourself for the record and tell us what you think.
Thank you. Thank you to the illustrious Senate Finance Committee. My name is David Guttenberg. I live in Fairbanks, the west side of town. I want to give you a little bit about my experience with this windfall offset. When I retired out of the state, and then a couple years later, started collecting Social Security, and I got hit with roughly $500 a month penalty. I was agog and kind of floored. It was a considerable amount of my benefit, my total benefit package between my retirements. And it's real, and it hits you. You hear about it, and it's off in the distance. You hear about it, other people complain and don't quite get it. But when it smacks you in the face and you don't understand it, and you just simply say to yourself, I'm not getting a windfall. I just want to get paid a benefit that I've already paid in for, nothing more. And to be penalized for that, for working for the state and having worked in the private sector for 25 years, and they're taking money away from you that you already put in. And I think the underlying factor in some of this is the way the Social Security is managed more than anything else. But even in the even in the congressional research paper, when it gives a justification, supporters argue that the formula is a reasonable means to prevent overgenerous payments and unintended benefits for people who have earnings not covered by Social Security and receive pensions for non-covered work. Well, I paid into those benefits. I paid into those since Social Security, and I don't want anything more than what I paid in for. And this takes that away. And Senator Wilikowski's resolution just addresses that. It hits a lot of Alaskans pretty hard, and it's not actual factual on anything. It's just a way to reduce benefits, and I think, Mr. Chairman, you mentioned it. It's coming up, and it's going to hit you, and it will. It will hit you You'll probably get maxed out with a $500 a month penalty, and you'll look at it, just shake your head, like, what happened? What is this about? And I think this is a resolution that our delegation back there can at least know that the state is aware of what's happening. It hurts their retirees, and it should be eliminated. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Guttenberg, for your testimony. Senator Stedman, question?
Just,
comment?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for a clarification there, Mr. Guttenberg, you'd mentioned you had 25 years of Social Security?
I worked out of the Laborers Union for 25 years.
Okay, and then your penalty was almost $500 a month?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
All right, seeing no further testifiers online, anybody in the room like to testify on SJR 12? Seeing none, public testimony is closed. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With the passage of this bill to the sponsor, would this be retroactive? And what would we already know that the Social Security system is underfunded, and we have another 2 million workers here. Do you think that the Congress will address the solvency of the Social Security fund as well? Maybe that's beyond your scope, but to me, the fund is in jeopardy within the next 30, 25 or 30 years. So is this a retroactive provision, or when would this, if Congress took action, when would this kick in?
Yeah, thank you, Senator, through the chair. This that would be up to Congress to decide how to enforce this. My hope is that it would be retroactive. I would certainly encourage Congress, if they were to take this up, to apply this to everyone who has suffered the loss of these benefits. I guess in terms of people who have already lost, been subject to the WEP or GPO, I don't think they would make back payments to them, I guess, if that's what you're saying. But people who are currently retired and are having $498 or withdrawn, you know, taken out of their Social Security, I think absolutely that's the way I would certainly advocate for it, is that ends immediately. There's not a big back payment for people who have had their WEPs or GPOs offset. As far as solvency, you're absolutely right. There is definitely a Social Security solvency issue. It's an issue for Congress to take up. There's a lot of different ways that you can solve that problem, and probably above my pay grade.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the trick here is to have 30-plus years in Social Security. Otherwise, you get hammered, and I think very few people that I've ever run into even realize this exists until they start looking at retirement, and then they realize that this is, it's almost like a trap, kind of. But I'm fortunate enough, I got well above 30 years in, so I don't have a financial interest in this, but I think it should be something that the federal government should repeal. People do pay into Social Security, and they just want their they want their benefit back when they retire.
Thank you. Seeing no further committee discussion on SJR 12, Senator, thank you, and to your staff for the presentation. It was very good. We're going to set an amendment deadline for 1 p.m. Monday, February 28th. Seeing no further action to come before the committee, I am going to take just a brief at ease, just for a brief. We're back on the record. Our next, we will adjourn this afternoon's meeting at 1 p.m., and we are adjourned at 10:30.